You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning, I was joined by the former Palace and Charlton midfielder, Paul Mortimer.
This is Love Sport.
Jamie has come in with the newspapers. He's got stories on the back pages, Jamie, yes?
Yes, I have, yeah. Back pages mostly dominated by Wolves beating Manchester United. The headline in the Sun, that's gonna hurt. Gunner, spelt like Ollie Gunner.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out, because otherwise I'd have been completely lost with that.
Some of the listeners might not be. Yeah,
if they're particularly thick.
They are.
Well, anyway, for you thick people out there, Jamie will talk you through the headlines and what the pun means.
Wolves by Ollie again is the headline in the Mail.
By Ollie?
Yeah.
That means by golly. Okay, for anyone going, well, what does he mean? By Ollie. I don't understand. Okay.
No, does it?
Yeah.
It says bite. No, it says bite. It's not pronounced by T. It says Wolves bite Ollie again.
Oh, bite Ollie. Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I got that completely
wrong.
But
that's another headline. You could use that one another time. Bite Ollie.
Yeah, it's a bit advanced, I think. But anyway, go on.
Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, a lot of the talk in the papers about that. Second time in the season. I mean,
time in the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Yes.
They beat them in the FA Cup, and they beat them well in the FA Cup, and then they beat them well again last night. Ashley Young didn't help, though, did he?
Idiot. No, he didn't. That was it was like Mort said, it could even have been a red, couldn't it, if he hadn't have... I think it's one of those ones quite often when a referee gives a second yellow, if he knows the player's going off, then he won't bother with the straight red. He'll just give the second yellow.
Just by the way, Luke Shaw got a booking last night, which was his 10th of the season, misses the next two games. They're missing their two first-choice fullbacks for the next games.
Huge.
Now, I mean, look, they've got... Who have they got next? They've got West Ham at home. Maybe they'll get away with it. Maybe.
Yeah.
But losing both your first-choice fullbacks is going to hurt.
Depends on what West Ham turn up. Because if West Ham do turn up, they're a decent side.
Yeah, but if
not like the other day.
The Everton one, they might be all right. Yeah. Anyway, in the end, they're going to lose games. They are.
Yeah, Oliver Kay in the Times says it's a bit of a wake-up call for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Do you think that's right? I think he's had, well, if he hasn't woken up yet, you know, having lost to them 17 days ago, he should have, really. I mean, do you think there's a wake-up call?
I said to Mortz, I think they are a different team without Marcus Rashford in that side. Yeah. I think Marcus Rashford has been absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And he stretches the play a little bit. And that's what you need to do with Wolves. You need to try and get behind them. Mm. And you can't. Lukaku's not that sort of player. Lukaku is a back to the goal, chest it down, bring other players in.
Yeah.
The way United are playing, they want to stretch that game, and I think Rashford allows that. Well, does that sound like I know
bustling.
What I'm talking about?
You know
about
exactly
there?
What you're talking about.
I mean, I was talking, and I thought, oh, this could
have
be
you
up
played the
in
game?
Fact, in
I've,
fact,
well, at a high level.
At a high level. Well, if you
I'm going to call you Gaffer.
Jewish, if you count a Jewish Sunday league as a high level, then yes.
I'm not calling you Stan. I'm going to call you Gaffer. You're don't, quite don't right, Gaffer.
I just that's what it feels like.
Yeah,
me.
All right, Chief.
All right, see.
You're quite right, boss.
See, the way he's doing it now. Don't disrespect me. Otherwise. You'll be playing with the hors-d'oeuvres,
mate. I'm not dissing you, fam. No. I think you're right. Quite right. The thing about Lukaku is he's big and bustling. He doesn't have that explosive pace. That pace that makes the back four drop off and opens up the midfield for Manchester United to play, because that's what it's about. It's not just about getting Rashford in. If he does it once and scares the back four, they will drop off, and that means that Man United's midfield, people like Pogba, will have more space to be able to play their football.
I'd have said that if he'd have given me a chance. I'd have completed my point and said exactly
sorry,
that.
Sorry, Gaffer.
That's all right, son. Anyway, I think they're missing Rashford. That's my feeling, and so it's going to be. I think it's going to be tough for them. But wake up call. No, I don't think so.
Having said that,
they're just missing one of their best players.
As Solskjaer said, they could have been 2 or 3 up in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So let's not get ahead of ourselves of how dominant Wolves were, because after the first 20 minutes, they probably were the better side, especially the second half of that first half. Wolves were completely on top. But United could have been out of sight then.
You have to look at the games they've lost. And I even go back to the Arsenal one. Lukaku scores those two chances he missed. The game's different.
Yeah.
The only one is the previous Wolves game where they did not turn up. Deserved nothing from it. This game, we've seen the chances, and Patricio made two great saves from McTominay and Lukaku, and Lingard should have scored. So they had their chances. They had their chances.
Yeah. I don't know. United, I think they've blown hot and cold. I think they were lucky against Watford. I think they were lucky against Spurs a few months back when Spurs could have had 4 or 5. De Gea had an absolutely brilliant game, and then they got one chance and they scored. So I don't think this is a great United team. I think they're okay. No. I think if Pogba's playing the way he was yesterday, he's almost a passenger.
He is he's a liability.
McTominay looked like a better midfielder.
He had a better game yesterday, didn't he? But like you say, when you got Fred playing that pivot role and then McTominay...
He can't carry people. And they carried Fred and they carried Pogba. What I'll say about Solskjaer, which is what I said to you before, I think he flits between being good and slightly lucky. Do you know what I mean? There's bits where he's been lucky. There's bits where he's been good. Now we're going to learn a little bit more about him now, between now and the end of the season. Because he's actually, what he said yesterday was a message to his players also. You've got us into this mess. Now we've got, we've got to win virtually every game. Whereas before we could win a couple and draw a couple, if we want what we want by the end of the season, we've got to win all the games.
Yeah, they need to win 5 out of 6.
Exactly.
And if you said they're going to lose to City, then they've got to win the game against Chelsea. Yeah. And they've got to win Everton away. And they've got to win against Everton away. And this is all while they're playing Barcelona in the Champions League. It's going to be hard for them to qualify.
It's going to be tight. We'll have a chat about Pochettino and his comments as Spurs go into their new stadium tonight.
About being a big club. Mm. Right, okay. We'll do that in a second.
Love sports.
Yeah, well, Spurs move into their new stadium tonight with a game against Crystal Palace. Neil Ashton in The Sun writes, everybody was meant to be on the happy pills yesterday at Tottenham's new home. There were giddy oohs and ahs as Daniel Levy proudly showed off the latest fads, trends and gizmos. Then there was Maurizio Pochettino. Basically, I mean, Poch is happy to be moving in there, but he used this as another time to basically say, right, now you need to match my ambition. He says, if we're going to be a big club, now we need to act like a big club. And he said, in every aspect, basically meaning we're going to need money. I mean, he talked yesterday about the people comparing them to Liverpool, and he said, well, how are we like Liverpool? You know, they spent £75 million on Virgil van Dijk 18 months ago. Keeper Alisson was £70 million. They had two midfielders on the bench when they spent more than £100 million on in the summer. He says, we're not really like Liverpool. Basically, we'd be punching above our weight, and so now we need to actually match them. If we're going to enjoy the stadium as a big club, we need to match these big clubs in every way.
I think he's right. I mean, we've been saying it all season. He is absolutely right. They have to spend money. Have they got it? I mean, as Paul said to me, have they finished paying for the stadium? We don't know, but they have to find another £250 million.
Do you know what? I've just written it down as you were speaking. Are they Newcastle in disguise? Yeah. Because if you listen to what Rafa Benitez said the other day after their defeat, it's the exact same things. They were talking about, you know, 50 million this and, you know, we haven't got that. And are they, because Newcastle, years, oh, they're a big club, big stadium, big support, 1-0. Is that where Spurs are heading?
You get the feeling, don't you, that he will spend money sooner or later?
Really?
I do, yeah. I don't think you'll go another
What in their history tells you, gives you that information? What tells you?
But this is a new Spurs.
I think
this is a new Spurs. I mean, as Pochettino is saying,
what part of it's new? The only bit that's new will be the stadium.
Yeah, but the stadium, you don't build a stadium like that unless you have ambition.
Yeah, I understand that.
I mean, that's why you would do that. You know, they were talking about it in the paper this morning. They've spent... It's 17 years. Daniel Levy has thought about this stadium for 17 years. I've seen him standing at the Emirates in the director's box looking at us celebrating another win over Tottenham whenever it happened and looking like, I want this. This is what I want. And you could see it in him, the ambition. And he's got that ambition. But it's whether they've got the money.
Ambition really... for what, though? Because what I'm saying is, yes, to have a great stadium. I get that. I totally get that. For me, the problem I have is in the last 3 or 4 years, they've had a couple of opportunities where they could have won the title and shown no nil ambition in terms of actually winning the title. They could have if they'd spent a little bit of money. So for me, yes, have a great stadium and it brings in resources and money. Fantastic. I just don't see, if you look at the club, the culture they've created at the club, well, who can we buy that's going to be better than what we've got? That's their mantra.
That's what Arsenal used to and say.
Look where they ended up.
But does that culture change?
Worry.
If you've got the manager going, well, yeah, I know we've got a great first 11, but you need strength and depth. I mean, Man City show that. If you've got the manager saying we need to spend, even if we've got a great first 11, the culture of the club can change, can't it?
The manager's desperate. Because if you look at this time last year and onwards, he'd drunk the Kool-Aid as well. He was literally saying, no, we're fine. Even at the start of this season, nope, we're fine. And as they've started to struggle and falter. He's now be getting more and more desperate. And now, whereas before he was subtly saying stuff, now he's just saying, well, we need the money.
Also because he's lost his bargaining power, hasn't
exactly.
he? Because
no leverage.
3 months ago, he had quite a bit of leverage. There was a possibility of him going to Man United, a possibility of him going to Real Madrid. They're both gone now. So he can't, he knows he's staying. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Levy knows he's staying. So he's saying it louder. We need to spend money. And they do. It's possible that they'll sell. I think it's almost certain that Christian Eriksen will leave. He hasn't signed a contract.
He's
they
gone
can't
for
keep
me.
Him. So if Christian Eriksen leaves, they'll get, you know, 100 million quid for him. And they have to buy a couple of players in who are going to make that team better. But they have lost a big creative midfielder there. It's going to hurt. There's no doubt about that. But they have to spend money.
I think, yeah, any money they do get in, that they will have to spend. I think they probably will spend. But, yeah, they're going to the new stadium. We don't want to put too much of a downer on it. Well, it's
no.
Poch's fault. He said it, not us. But
no, listen, they're excited and I'm sure it'll be a wonderful occasion for Tottenham fans and anyone connected with the club. They're going to this new stadium. But the reality is they've got 7 games to save their season, because if they end up in the Europa League at the end of this season, and I can't see them beating Man City in the Champions League, if they end up in the Europa League this season, that is a failure on their part.
Yeah,
with
I
the
agree.
Quality they've got, that is a failure.
It'd be a massive slip up. Yeah, Poch has said he's going to stick with Lloris tonight. He says he's one of the best in the world, still our number one.
Yeah.
The right decision, showing a bit of faith.
I say yeah. He's
really?
Your captain, he's your leader.
He's not playing well, though.
No, he's not playing well, but if he's your captain, he's your leader, and you've backed him all season long, then you stick with him.
Even though he's playing badly?
You stick with him. Because, again, the reason I say that is because of the influence he'll have. He'll have an influence in the dressing room.
What, he'll scare the living daylights out of the defence?
Hold on, so I'm saying. If you look, no, hold on 1 second. If you look at it logically, I know what you're saying, and I'm with you. He made a serious error the other day, to be truthful. He did, and that was terrible. Before that, he's not made serious errors like that. He's not been great. There's no disputing that. But for me, and I'm looking at the way Pochettino will be looking at it, is he has to do more than that to be dropped. That's my opinion. With the way they go, the way they deal with their top players at Spurs is they have to be terrible over a long period of time before they drop them. He doesn't do that.
You know
he
what it is?
Them.
You know, can I just put a slightly alternative point of view? Is that I thought that Lloris had a bad game against Liverpool. I thought he was looking shaky
terrible.
From the start. And I was one point when Mo Salah is, I think Mo Salah, possibly for me, I can't remember, going through on goal. Alderweireld is in front of him and he's looking back and he's thinking, do I want to park it, pass it back to Hugo Lloris?
Yeah, he didn't,
and he
did
doesn't.
Yeah, that's right.
He kicks it off. Now that tells me that he's scaring the defenders.
Yeah, that's right.
When a goalkeeper's playing like that, I think it just spreads up the pitch. Gazzaniga has done nothing wrong for Spurs in the cup games. I agree.
When
it's
you
a
drop
statement.
Your captain, it's a
statement.
Statement.
One, he might lose his confidence, might upset the apple cart a bit. Also, goalkeepers
lost
go through
confidence.
But goalkeepers go through these phases. He'll be hoping that he can get. But goalkeepers go through phases, and the manager sticks with them, and then they find their form again. And if they was to drop Lloris now, and then he was to lose his confidence, maybe even long term, then it'd be a mistake.
They've killed him. Is what you're saying. You know what? Yes. That is certainly a viewpoint. And that is, I think, what Pochettino will do. But there's going to be big pressure on him. And if I'm Roy Hodgson, I'm saying to the Palace players, shoot.
Oh.
When you get an opportunity, shoot.
Put every set piece underneath his nose.
Except for you, Christian Brente. You pass. Don't you ever shoot. Everyone else.
Do you know what, though? Shoot. Do you know what? One of the things I would say is, if it was 10, 12 games in, okay, you could drop him. Because there'll be enough time for him to get back in the side. If they drop him now, Gazzaniga would have to be terrible to get out of the side.
You know what? I absolutely get what you're saying. It's also about the time of the season. Mm-hmm. I just worry for him and for them keeping him in.
Well, if he does it again tonight, he's gone.
Yeah, but if he does it again tonight, also they're in serious trouble and not making the top four.
Exactly right. It's a gamble. It's a gamble.
He's getting another chance. Fulham won't be getting another chance. Sent plunging through the trapdoor, as Gareth Davies says here. But
that was them plunging.
Yeah, no, I got that.
I'd never got that.
but they died. They died with their boots on.
They died with their boots.
They died with their,
that's
what?
What, that's
they died with their boots on the wrong feet.
That's what Gareth Davies says.
General Custer
in the Sun. Maybe he wrote this before Watford scored all their late goals. But yeah, he said they showed a bit of fight.
They always show a bit of fight. They're just not good enough. They don't have... I mean, that defending... Who was it who did the air kick? I can't even remember who that was.
Cyrus Christie,
yeah. Le Marchand's not good enough.
They're not
Sergio Rico is definitely not good enough. Most of the players, they're playing Callum Chambers in midfield. Yeah. In midfield, this is not a Premiership quality team. It's all gone horribly wrong.
It's shocking that you managed to spend £100 million and still and come up from the Championship brilliantly in the second half of last season and then still don't have a team good enough.
Trust me, I tell you, it's not because, again, who's spending the money? If it's someone who does not know his players and does not know football, then this is what you get. You get a team of duds.
Well, so who's bringing them in, you're saying? You're saying the Cannabis didn't have enough...
Well, what's been happening is, you know, a lot of clubs now look at stats. That's what they look at. They don't look at players anymore. Exactly. They look at stats. They don't look at the characters because statistically, those players may have been fine. Do they understand the Premier League, the sheer volume of it, the sheer pace of it? No, they don't. It takes foreign players a year. You look at your Arsenal lot, Vieira and Petit and all them.
Vieira didn't take long. Or Petit. Pires took forever.
Vieira didn't hit the ground running.
Yeah, he did. First game, we were losing 1-0 Sheffield Wednesday. Sorry.
He had some spells.
Came on and he won the game you're brilliant.
Not a problem. I'm saying that they had difficult periods. That's what I'm saying.
Do you know what
they
I think?
Difficult periods
going through
the season.
I don't think it's so much about... bringing in players who don't know the Premier League. I think it's they brought in too many. And also, when they brought in too many, they upset all the players who got them up. They didn't say, we trust you at a higher level.
I think when you bring in foreign players, you can bring in loads of players if they've played in this division, if they understand the sheer volume and pace of it, because that is difficult for foreign players. They struggle with just the training, the lack of a winter break, just things like that. They don't get. They don't understand it.
The black ones can't play well in the cold weather, can they?
No, they can't. No, we can't. It's the truth. Listen, I spoke to a lot of foreign players.
It's a bit Brexity, isn't it, all of a sudden?
No.
Neil Warnock.
The reason why I'm saying it is I spoke to a lot of foreign players, and you know the thing that they can't? They marvel.
The ones who can speak English, obviously. Well, those that, yeah. Because a lot of them, they can't speak the language.
Well, you know what? I can just, you know, drum it out. Look at you. The reason why I'm saying this is, look, I've spoke to a lot of foreign players who marvel. They sort of sit there and go, I can't work out how... Are you going to carry on? Are you going to keep giving me grief? Me of all people, you're going there.
Go on.
Spoke to a lot of foreign players who cannot work out how players don't get injured, how players can play at that pace, how they can play without a break. They just don't get it. That's why foreign players love watching English football. They do because they cannot understand how players can deal with what is thrown at them, the volume of games, the cup games, no midweek off and all that. So it's difficult.
It's taking them time.
In a nutshell, before all the grief that you were giving me.
And by the way, are they going to be any better in the Championship? Because I think the Championship's a tougher league for that. More games, eight games.
Yeah, absolutely no guarantee. When anyone can beat anyone in the Championship, which they can, no guarantee that a team as bad as Fulham this season can come straight back up. I think it'll take them some time.
They're not going to because they've got bigger problems. How many players are going to leave? How many players are going to stay? Financial aspects, you know, they've got so much, and that's why I think I'd like Scott Parker to get the job, but they need someone experienced to be able to sort that out. It's a mess.
This is Love Sport.
Now, Jamie came in with a story yesterday about snooker player Anthony McGill, who was docked a point for arriving late to his game. He was a frame, wasn't he? He arrived late to his game in the China Open. Let's have a listen.
Anthony McGill, the snooker player, was docked a frame in his China Open first round win. Can you guess why? I bet you won't guess. Overslept. He said he woke just 2 minutes before his match. It's due to start in Beijing. Yeah. He woke up during the night, went down to practice for a couple of hours, went back to bed at 7 a.m. He said.
That's a good idea.
And then he woke. Next thing he knew, he woke. It was 2:28 in the afternoon.
Was he jet late?
I suppose he must have been kicked in. Yeah.
If he's waking up in mid.
He didn't acclimatise early enough, did he? Yeah. He probably just flew out a couple of days before. Thought I'd be all right.
Says he got dressed in 60 seconds, ran down to the hotel foyer. Yeah. Says his shoelaces were still untied. It was like a movie scene. But he did get Dr. Frame. He
what
was
movie? I mean, you don't watch that many movies. I haven't seen a movie. You go, remember that shoelace scene? No one's ever said that. Do you remember when that bloke, the shoes fell off?
Since Laurel and Hardy.
That snooker player, exactly. Yeah, like a movie. He needs to see better movies. That'd be cool. Yeah, well, I didn't think it would make a great film, but there was another story later of which I thought would be more successful on the big screen.
This is a new suit that the Royal Marines might be wearing soon. Suit.
Oh, right. 300 soup. what is it?
Is it an intelligence suit?
Is it a smart suit?
It's a smart suit. It's not. It costs £340,000. It gives them wings.
Blooming heck. 340 grand for a suit.
Gives them wings, though.
Wings.
Wings. It's basically like a jetpack.
Right.
But, it weighs £60. 3D printed suits. And it could one day be used by Marines to assault an enemy ship by flying over the water and landing on the ship.
Oh, that
pretty cool.
That looked pretty cool. See, that's Hollywood. That is like a Hollywood film, as opposed to earlier when someone hasn't tied their shoelaces up. As we were saying, you're going to go and see that film about the bloke with the shoelaces or the flying Marines? I'd want to go and see the flying Marines, I think, really. Well, I think I stand by that statement. Anyway, Hollywood apparently have been busy overnight. Turns out I may have been wrong about snooker player Anthony McGill's Hollywood credentials.
In a world where time zones create problems, one man, one shoelace, one docked frame. In a movie described as the comeback of the century, where a man's passion for practice becomes his enemy, Anthony McGill and Nigel Bond star in Overslept. Coming soon. Maybe if you set an alarm clock.
Busy with the editing machine.
I want to know who the voice is.
Who the voiceover? Yeah. I don't know, but we've obviously got a voice that we have a voiceover artist for that very eventuality. He didn't set his alarm. That's what happened.
That's the strangest thing.
Well,
at least he's admitted it.
You've just set her an alarm. I always set an alarm. I mean, I set an alarm on trains. If I'm going to have a little kip on a train for 15 minutes, because otherwise I'm ending up in High Barnet.
Yeah, I've gone.
And no one wants to end up.
I ended up nearly at Gatwick Airport, mate.
Did you?
Yeah.
Right.
Nonsense.
No,
just fell asleep.
We've got to set an alarm. Jamie's coming as well.
Yeah, I've been down. I'm trying to get to East Croydon. I've been down to Crawley, got out, went all the way back up through London to Harpenden.
No, no, really?
Yeah, then finally got back down to East Croydon about 7 a.m.
Right, I told you my mate was an alcoholic. He actually moved to the end of the Piccadilly line. So he didn't have to. Set an alarm.
He moved
to Cockfosters just so he'd wake up and go, "Oh, I'm home." Fabulous. What have you got?
You can do that. But if the train goes back the other way, which happened to me the other day, I went to Stratford, then went back to Baker Street, woke up, thought, "Oh, I'm nearly home." Brilliant. Fell asleep again and ended up in West London and thought, "Oh, I must have been going the wrong way." I do it all the time.
Really?
Incredible.
Yeah.
Set an alarm. You've got a phone. You've got a phone with you. It's not like you need to carry a big old clock.
If I drink, I'm asleep on the tube. Yeah. Well, it's these early mornings, isn't it?
No, it's the drink.
It is in fact the booze. Yeah, it is. It is. What have you got?
Yeah, well, electrical nose job is going to be developed. A non-surgical nose job. It uses electricity. Basically, it passes a current through nasal cartilage, makes the tissue more malleable, and the nose can then be shaped into a new form.
Right. He's not looking at me. He's making a point of not looking at me.
I was going to let you do the jokes here. No.
Well, all right. I mean, I suppose if it's painless and it works, why not?
Could revolutionise cosmetic surgery, they're saying.
Rhinoplasty. Yeah, I know you're looking
I'm looking
at me.
Right
know,
at you.
I know. And
it doesn't mean
anything, maybe though. In the past I might have thought about it, but at this point.
Content.
Yeah,
but you love your nose.
It's not love. I've learned to live with it. I think is what it is.
You just accepted it.
Yeah, I think in the end one has to.
You've got to love your body,
2,000 years of inbreeding has got into this look.
But you've got to
Jews
love it.
Jews having sex with other Jews, and here we are. I've got very thick glasses as well. A couple of generations, we're going to fall forward with the weight. If you hear an audible thud in Israel. So, although that could be a rocket going off as well. So there's a number of possibilities. But one has to just accept these things.
Certainly true. Another story here in the papers about an egg-loving lizard.
Love this story already.
He basically swallowed 6 golf balls. Got a bit confused, thinking they're all lovely, delicious eggs.
Right.
Which I thought he crunched the eggs first, and presumably you'd be unable to crunch the the golf balls.
No, don't reptiles. They swallow things whole, and then the body, the acid in the body, just breaks them down.
Ah, right.
Is what happens. I'm not sure if the acid in a lizard's body will be able to break down a golf ball.
Yeah, no, right. That'd be a problem. I'm not sure what became of the lizard. But basically, the golf balls have been put there to encourage chickens to lay in a coop.
Really? Yeah. So the chickens see a golf ball and think, oh, I'll lay an egg there.
I'll do a bit of that.
I'll do
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much.
Chickens are thick as mints, aren't they? If that's what they think. Right. Yeah, so if you want your missus to get pregnant, what you do is you leave golf balls lying about the house. That's basically the way it works. And then she goes, hey, fancy a bit of a...
bit of golf.
Bit of golf. Yeah. Do you fancy playing around, is what they say. Oh, thank you.
God.
Okay.
This is Love Sport.
Jamie, you got front page news?
Yeah, we'll have a look at some of the front pages, shall we?
Oh, God, here we go.
Front page of the Mail, Theresa's last stand. Time says May invites Corbyn to break Brexit deadlock.
Right.
And the front page of the Sun, is that your bright idea? All, of course, talking about Theresa May's decision to join forces with Corbyn.
You know what it is? It's going to be a softer Brexit. It's going to be a customs union, probably. I mean, who knows? But in the end, she doesn't have a majority. She doesn't. When she had a majority, she could have gone for a harder Brexit. She'd have got the ERG on side, but she doesn't have one. So she doesn't have a choice. It has to be a bit more collegiate, and it's going to be a soft Brexit. It almost certainly, in fact, will be a worse position than we were in before we had to vote.
Yeah, it will.
Is that possible?
Who wants this? No one wants this.
No one really wants this. And the truth is that if she came up with a really soft Brexit with a customs union and possibly even free movement. I mean, I'm not saying that'd be the case. And then she put it to the people and say, look, would you rather have this or stay? Probably get a stay, which is maybe what we'll end up with. Maybe she'll go, this is the best we can do with the majority I have because of the system we have.
So what you're saying is, after this 2 years of roller coaster, now we're going to stay.
Well, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen.
But I'm saying that the
electoral math, as they would say in America, doesn't really support any sort of decent deal.
Do you know what worries
me? Anything that makes substantive change.
What worries me about all of this is, you know, when the referendum came along and the decision, the behaviour of people to other people changed. Okay.
I'd like to think that is different now.
No, but what I'm saying is it changed, and some of it still goes on. And after all of this, okay, this treatment, we come back to a point where we're all going to agree to stay. It's almost like we've reset the button and erased the last 2 years of nonsense.
Yes.
It worries me.
Put ourselves in a worse
position. How do I then, Jay, trust any MP? How do I trust anyone after this? Because they've all had a say, and they've all let us down.
Listen, you know what? They've tried. I mean, yeah, you see, again, though, I think that is incendiary language, to let us down. I think it's also about expectations as to what anyone would have expected them to do. Well, listen, you've got some MPs. I think people have shown themselves up for how they are, but I think quite a lot of them are trying to do the best they can. I think there's quite a lot of them are fighting against a no deal, whatever your views about that. What I saw yesterday was a Faisal Islam on Sky have a go at some protester who was talking about treason and traitor and betrayal and all the rest of it. And he said, why are you using that language? What, that is not helpful as language. And as for let down, I've long ago had no expectations of our politicians doing anything.
All right, I understand.
And I think that is a sensible way to be.
What I'm saying is this. Let's look at it this way. Fulham fans, Fulham, you know, Fulham's players have done the best they can, but they're not good enough.
Theresa May,
that's the problem. That's what it is.
We've got too many
foreign MPs. They can't make
the
judgments
now,
in the cold weather.
What I'm saying is, listen to what you've said. They're doing the best they can.
I think a lot of them are.
That's not good enough
for
us.
What do you want?
We trust them people and they let us down.
To do what?
Theresa May hasn't been good enough to dealing with Brussels.
No, Theresa May has been rubbish.
The rest of them, they all want different things. So therefore, we haven't come up with a majority, and therefore everyone's saying, oh, they've let us down. The problem is they all want different things. They can't agree on anything. But she has let us down because she's the Prime Minister of this country.
I agree.
She should have negotiated better
with
Brussels.
Your expectations are like England's were pre-Gareth Southgate. Low. That's where you are. Your expectations for this are low.
Finally, when my expectations were really low, that's when I had a good time.
Yeah.
Right? You have to lower your expectations. I agree, though. I think our party leaders have been rubbish.
Terrible.
I think Corbyn and May have been terrible. But I think there's quite a lot of them.
Yeah. what, done okay and just...
I think they're trying... Well, I think they've possibly steered us away from a no deal. I'm not sure.
It's the infighting and backstabbing and all of that. That's what worries me.
Steering us away from a no deal, which is what everyone voted for. No one voted for a half-assed Brexit where you stay in a customs union and potentially the single market.
I don't think people did vote for the possible consequences of what a no deal could bring us. I don't. I think that they wanted to get away, but I think that the possibilities of 40-mile queues on the M20
scaremongering. You've been brainwashed by the scaremongers.
I have been brainwashed by the scaremongers.
But that is a possibility. That's what frightened everyone. So that's a possibility.
War, whore, and scare are the three mongers.
Fish.
Are the other mongers.
Well, now Corbyn's got a decision. Now he's either going to basically agree with Theresa May and basically help her out.
Come together
with the Tories, yeah. Or go against it and then go against the will of the people by... so, you know.
Please don't say that phrase, will of the people, will in of here the again. People. Okay, listen, it's a mess. There's no doubt it's an absolute unholy mess. Yeah. And even still, by the way, if we do go out with a no deal, can I just say that at the end of the day, we have to then negotiate trade deals and... All those things, how much money we're going to pay them, how much the Northern Ireland thing, they all come back up again. They all come back up again. All those things, we're not just putting them aside. It's just we have to start from scratch. From what I've read, it doesn't look like a good idea to go on a no deal. And most of the MPs feel the same way, as far as I can tell. About 450 of them.
And may
except
I just
for
say,
the crazy ones, the ERG lunatics, as far as I can tell.
May I just say, the thing that worries me now is when we do go to negotiate with other nations, how weak we are.
We're coming from
at the moment. Other countries in Europe must look at us and just look at them. They're rubbish.
We're in a weak position now because they know that most MPs want to leave with a deal. Once we've gone and they wanted to trade with us still, then they'll be like, all right, okay, yeah,
still,
you win.
We're still, you know, we've still got some game.
Now we've called them bluff. Oh, we've got game all right now.
Yeah, but you know what? We got game, but it's our negotiators. We need decent agents. We ain't got them at the moment. The people negotiating have been terrible.
Anyway, that's that sorted. I'm glad we sorted that out. 7:49. Now, Brentford were given a rough ride in Wales. They lost 3-0 to Swansea. It didn't start well for the Bees as they were behind inside the first minute as Nathan Dyer set the Swans on their way to victory. Joining us now is the former Brentford boss, Mark Warburton. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you?
You know what? We're doing all right. Having sorted Brexit, it's nice to talk about the football again. Swansea has not been a happy hunting ground for Thomas Frank and his team, has it?
No, it's a tough place to go for many clubs, though. It's, you know, good football being played. You saw their performance against City in a cup recently, how good they can be. So, always a tough place to visit.
Quite. And a mid-table finish for Brentford. It's not what they were hoping for or was expected. They were one of the favourites to go up, weren't they?
Well, people are saying that. I mean, that's all credit to Matthew and the staff at Brentford. I mean, if they're one of the favourites with one of the smaller budgets, etc., and how they operate, that's all credit to many people at the club. They had a bit of a tough run, as you've seen, but a few clubs have done that, and they're still in it. I mean, they went, you know, a strong finish now, and they can finish in the top 10. And again, another strong season for Brentford, because there's some big clubs in this division, as we all know.
Mark, you know the thing for me, morning, by the way, the thing that gets me and what I like about Brentford is that there was a spell where Thomas Frank was struggling, and they could have sacked him. In fact, other managers have gone for far less. They backed him. And that's very rare, I've got to say, for owners. And he's repaid them, really, by pushing them up the table again.
I think you look at Matthew over the last 5, 6, 7 years of his time at the club. You know, I think Dean had a rough spell a couple of seasons ago. The first 18 games was struggling. I don't think there was ever any chance that he would be sacked.
Yeah.
I think they give the managers time. They let them get through these patches. Players have poor spells. It's so many factors can influence it. But Matthew and the board stick by their managers. They give them that valuable commodity of time and they get the rewards from that. And Thomas has come through. Good performances. They're a tough team to beat. And a really good game this weekend against Derby. That'll be a tough place to take your team.
I mean, I'm looking at the Championship table. It's a brilliant league. We've been saying how much fun it's been to watch the Championship this year. I mean, another one of your former clubs, Nottingham Forest, they're still right in there, aren't they?
No, they are. You look at it and it is a magnificent league. And you know, at the start of the season, we talked about this, I think, and 15, 16 clubs can generally put forward a claim to be in the top six. Because you look at the size of the clubs within the division, but Forest are right there. You look at Middlesbrough, a tough one again last night. I think there's 5 defeats in a row for Tony, so he'll be very conscious of that. They slip down to 8th and you look at the table and it is so, so tight. Bristol City, again, big games at the weekend coming up. They've got Wigan, so they'll be looking for 3 points there. So, again, tight table, so much at stake. And I think this will go down to the wire, the last minute, the last day of the season.
I am duty-bound to ask you about the QPR job. You have been linked with it. I know you're looking to get back into management. Would that be somewhere you'd be interested in?
I'm sure there's many, many people, I think, interested in the QPR job. It's a tremendous
Nicely swerved, Mark.
Yes, I think there's many people, you know, and a lot of people out of work at the moment. Yeah. A variety of reasons, good people out of work. So any job comes up, as I say, if it's the right opportunity and the club can see you the right person, then I'm sure that club will move forward. So, no, for me, it's just about putting my head down and waiting for that right opportunity.
And I'm also looking in Scotland. I was looking at Rangers and Celtic Rangers, another one of your former clubs. How do you think Stephen Gerrard's done there in his first season?
Yeah, I think I saw Stephen playing off the other day. I bumped into Stephen, but you know, I'm very impressed by the job that Stephen's done. It's a huge club. The gap with Celtic now is 13 points, and that'll be on people's minds. But they've got bigger budgets at the, you know, at the moment. Celtic got the benefit of Champions League football for the last 5, 6, 7 seasons, and it takes a lot to close that gap. So Stephen will be looking for significant investment from the board to back him to go and get the 2 or 3 players he needs to close that gap. And if he gets that, I think the next year is their year. I've been saying that all season, but he needs to have that backing from the board.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Nice to speak to you.
Pleasure. Nice speaking to you.
See you soon. Mark Warburton there, former Brentford and Queen's Park, and Nottingham Forest and Rangers boss. Talking about the Rangers down here, the Queen's Park variety. Tim Sherwood's still favourite for that job. I mean, I know what you said, right? I know what you said, that they do need someone who's got a bit of experience to go in there.
I think so.
I mean, we spoke to Tony Thorpe here on the show, former QPR striker, and he was saying, what about a young person coming in and doing that sort of job? But is QPR that sort of
The problem you have is, I mean, everyone says, yeah, it's a young person's job. They've got, once the season finishes, all the lone players go back. So they've got a very, very young squad. They've got 1 or 2 experienced players. And you're going to put a manager who has no experience in that. I think it's a very, very difficult thing.
Yeah.
Because he's got to be an extremely good coach to be able to put everything together. He's going into a situation he's never experienced before either. That's the problem that you've got. You've got to have someone who goes into that job who's had a little bit of experience. I look at, you know, talking about Lee Bowyer at Charlton. Personally, for me, as a Charlton, ex-Charlton player, I wouldn't want him to leave. He'd be okay because he's had a couple of years' experience at a club like Charlton where the struggles, he's had to do
firefighting that. Firefighting a little bit.
He's had to do that. So he would be probably perfect. Don't hate me, Charlton fans. I don't want him to go, okay? But he would be someone because working with very little is something that he's used to.
And they are working with very little at QPR, aren't they? They had a £42 million fine for whatever it was, irregularities. Spending too much in the
2013-14 season, that was, by the way.
Yeah.
Before they got promoted. So,
well, when they were up, everyone used to say they don't want to go down.
Yeah, exactly.
If they go down, they got paid this massive fine.
Got a young squad. They've got 1 or 2 good players. Your Luke Freemans. They might lose some in the summer. That's a problem. Freeman, Luongo, Scowen, people like that. Eze. They may lose them in the summer. And if they get the money in, will it be given to the new manager? I don't know.
No.
So there's a lot going on. And that's why Tim Sherwood, I'm not having. Not a fan of.
By the way, we don't know which division Queen's Park Rangers will be playing in next season right this moment.
Exactly.
They should be okay. They're 8 points clear. But you know what? A couple of results. We've seen how quickly Wimbledon have climbed the table in the league below. And they were about 10 points down. So it is possible and they could get pulled in.
Well, it doesn't matter. See, the thing about it is everyone looks at the points. It's not about the points. It's about the form you're in at the time. If you're losing games, then, I mean, if you look at Middlesbrough, for example, they have been in the top 6 all season. Then they go on a spell of losing games. Now they're out of it. Yeah. And that's what it's about, form you're in at the moment.
This is Love Sport.
Rapper's Delight. Sugar Hill Gang, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it was,
indeed.
Yeah.
Why are we playing that then, Jamie?
There's a man who can taste sounds, and he's revealed the flavour of some of the most catchy songs in history.
How is that possible?
Good question. I mean, I don't know. I can't do it. It's synesthesia.
Oh, right.
And apparently, if he heads up the UK synesthesia, synesthesia association.
Who?
Right.
Where you're able.
That's easy for you to say.
And yeah, Rapper's Delight is one of the songs that.
What's it taste of?
Well, what do you reckon?
Strawberries and cream.
Cheese and pickle.
Well, you're not far off, Mort. So it's actually macaroni cheese.
Rapper's Delight. Sorry. What?
Yeah, see,
don't you think, Mort? You tell me.
Yeah.
Macaroni cheese sounds like white food.
It is.
I'm
yeah,
not
it's just white
saying.
Food.
I'm not saying it's white in the sense it's actually the colour of it. It just sounds like white
yeah,
food.
Yeah, it's white people's food.
Yeah, it's not. And I'm not even talking, by the way, about curry goat and rice and peas. I'm talking macaroni cheese sounds like
it
white
does,
person's
yeah.
food.
You
it
can't does. Put that song to
that
rap
sounds
macaroni cheese.
Ridiculous.
That's killed it for me. Hot
oh,
chocolate.
I like it. Yeah. I said, oh, I like a bit of macaroni cheese. It sounds ridiculous. Anyway, oddly enough, though, I saw an advert for macaroni cheese. I've never liked macaroni cheese, but it looked really nice.
It's not bad.
I've never been a fan.
How can you not like macaroni cheese?
Well, you know
what's
what?
What's not to like?
I don't like macaroni or cheese. Aside from that.
Oh, don't try that then, no. No, but
have you had it with ketchup?
I read this story and
nice,
I thought...
Man.
I'm not even getting involved in
all
it.
All right, anyway, go on.
Yeah, you do it. I'd go with that.
Thank
a bit
you.
Of ketchup with it.
Thank you.
Well, I read this story and I thought, hang on a minute. He says it tastes like macaroni cheese. I'm so sure there's macaroni in that song. And I looked up the lyrics and yeah, sure enough, in the song he says he talks about going around his mate's house and the macaroni's soggy. So, I mean, can he taste the song or is he just thinking, oh, that's one of the lyrics?
You're asking. I have no. I don't think you can taste the song. But anyway, synesthesia is a thing.
Are you
where
denying
you can
the whole
taste
synesthesia UK association?
No, it's not about. I'm not denying the association. I deny you the right to exist. No, I'm just saying that it's interpretation, is it not? Mm. And what he might interpret as macaroni cheese, someone else might think differently because it's in his head, right?
Mm, yeah,
unless everyone in the Synesthesia Association has gone, yeah, macaroni cheese. Yeah, that's right. I was wondering what that taste was. It was macaroni cheese.
Yeah, you'd have to test them. You have to all write it down privately just to taste whether it's...
And then hold it up and go, oh, yeah, macaroni cheese.
You
really?
Right, yeah.
Oh, I got fish and chips. It's a completely different taste.
Well, Gangnam...
Is there vinegar on it? maybe. Only in a 12-inch version. It's very odd, isn't it?
Gangnam Style. Can you guess what food that was?
I don't know. Welsh rarebit.
Wrong. That was chicken katsu curry.
This is weird.
And the Macarena.
Well, that should be macaroni cheese. It's what that should be. The Macarena. I can't even imagine what that tastes like.
Think.
Something really horrible and soggy and grim.
Wrong. That's an ice cream sundae.
Really?
Yeah, that apparently,
I don't see how that works. But there you go.
Make your own minds up
at
home.
The whole thing is a bit weird, isn't it?
It is a bit weird to say you can taste songs.
That's incredible.
But who are we to say that they can't taste them?
Yeah, who are we? Well, I couldn't. It's odd. I'm looking up synesthesia. Okay, this is a youth. Right, okay, you can taste things.
Yeah.
Oh, strange. I'm going to have to read up a little bit more about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Then I'll come back to you.
All right. Thanks very much. more than a third of Brits admit spying on their lover's phone. It's 4 in 10. Or social media, just to see if they're cheating.
Yes.
That's quite a lot.
Well, wasn't there a story about the guy who fell asleep on the aeroplane and his wife had a look on his phone while he was asleep? And apparently what she did is she used his thumb to get on because the thumbprint, and found out he was having an affair and he woke up to her punching him in the face on a flight. So that, you
Are
know.
You're kidding.
Yeah. So
that's a rubbish holiday coming up, isn't it?
Well, it certainly doesn't start well. Yeah. It doesn't all go well for the other 2 weeks. So only a third. So more than a third.
More than a third. 4 in 10 do look up, look at partner's phone or social media. And more than half of those who do look find some incriminating evidence.
Right. That's why you need a second secret phone. Did I say that out loud?
Yeah.
I mean,
I've got a second phone.
Have you?
What are you trying to say?
Your brothers always have second phones. What is going
what are you
on? All my black mates have got second phones. That's so funny. Why have you got a second phone?
It's a work phone.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, a work phone.
Why are you looking like that? Why are you looking like that? What are you insinuating?
I'm not insinuating. I'm saying.
Yeah, what are you saying? Say it.
It's a work phone.
What were you thinking? Drug dealing or cheating?
Oh,
my God.
Drug dealing.
Taking it further.
It's
work. It's a work. It's work and leisure.
What?
Leisure phone. What? The leisure phone would be the one you would use. Okay. So, all right.
That's quite a lot. I think once you start checking social media or your partner's phone, though, I think the trust's already gone a bit,
hasn't
it?
You've got a problem if you're checking.
I think that's true. Mm. I think there's something in that. What are we saying? Don't check.
No, there's a reason why you're checking.
Well, quite often the person checking is the one who's ended up who's the cheat themselves. That's
really
what, from watching Jeremy Kyle. That's what I've found.
the round of all knowledge.
If somebody's checking on your phone, then they're probably cheating on you.
If they're accusing you of cheating, quite often they're cheating themselves.
Really?
Yeah, says Jeremy Kyle.
No, that is. I've heard that not just on Jeremy Kyle. That is one thing.
Okay. Or Jerry Springer.
Yeah. If you're faithful and your partner.
Do you know who Jerry Springer is?
Yeah. That I grew up with Jerry Springer.
Okay.
Yeah. My era, that is.
All right.
The Tulip has got planning permission. It's going up.
The new building?
Yes, 1,000 feet. 1,001 feet, actually. Don't know why they needed to do that.
Right.
But it's going to be the second tallest building.
In Europe?
A guy shown in the business news said, in Europe, I read the world.
Right. Oh, I thought there was a couple in Dubai.
No, you're right, Dubai.
All right.
Read that.
Oh, okay.
Making it up.
It is Europe.
Take it all back. Okay. Yeah. It is Europe. It's going to be after the Shard, I think. It's going to be second to the Shard.
I mean, it'd be amazing. I definitely want to have a look at the Tulip. When's it going to be ready in 2025, Guy said earlier, didn't he?
Yeah, so it's going to be a little while. It's going to, it's got rotating pods, restaurants, sky bars. Shower facilities, cycle parking.
Shower facilities. Yeah. Wow. Well, now you're selling it. They've got showers in it. My God. Shower facilities. Oh, it's just weird. Yeah. Windows. They've got everything.
Second sort of
building. Apparently. Roofs and all sorts of nonsense.
Western Europe, it is the second tallest. So I'm not sure where in Eastern Europe has anything taller.
I don't think it's Eastern Europe. I think it's, it might be maybe in Moscow. I mean, I'm sure they've spent a fair bit of money down there. But Dubai certainly got something taller.
Okay. You're right.
Very, very excited to see. Well, the London skyline, the city skyline. And Guy said that thing, didn't he? But no one ever visits the city at weekends.
That's right.
It is really quiet. So maybe the businesses would be around there would like the fact that at weekends there'd be loads of tourists coming up to go up there and take a look.
Or a shower.
Or come and have a shower. Yeah. If your bathroom is not working, you can come into the city for a shower on weekends. Shower facility. Did you read that?
Yeah, that's what it says. That's what it lists with all the restaurants and bars and stuff.
Just odd. Okay, fair enough. Love Sport. Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.